So as we dive into God's word this morning, I want to tell you one more special announcement to let you be aware of. Many of you have been following the big board out in the lobby regarding our financial progress, and you'll notice a special boost there this week. That continued to go up, praise God, that's really cool. Giving regularly throughout the year keeps our mission on mission with Jesus alive, our mission funded and moving forward, and we're really grateful constantly. I've got some special news to share with you. November might just be your best month for giving here in 2023. Here's why. Today is the start of Fourth and Goal Match Month. We are so grateful for everybody's ongoing faithful giving. And we've had a few generous families who've stepped forward and provided $110,000. Yes, I said that right. $110,000 in match dollars for November. So this is extra great. Right? It's extra great, right? Yeah, it really is. I want to encourage you to consider giving an extra gift this month. So please consider this challenge above and beyond your regular giving. So it's simple, gang. It really is. $25 becomes $50, $100 becomes $200, $500 becomes $1,000, and so on. And this extra generosity will go a long ways toward reaching our goal, helping us reach our goal for the year of $1.4 million by the end of December. And the big deal is it helps us continue the great work that God is doing in us and through us here at Manor Church. It really, truly, and I invite you, keep this in focus as we roll into the end of the year and you hear us more and more talk about the financial goals and where we are. Please keep in focus that it really is all about Jesus. Ultimately, it is all about Jesus and being on mission with him, and your faithful giving helps make that happen. Now, as a bonus, I have to tell you about this. A number of people know that I love Ohio State football. I heard that groan, whoever you were. And living here among a strong Penn State base presents some healthy rivalry. And with our Fourth and Goal initiative and these matching funds, some people, a number of you, this was not my idea, okay? A number of people have said to me that it would be good to somehow get to see me in Penn State gear. And you're filling in the blanks quick. You're quick study today. You are. You're following it. I can't believe I'm going to tell you this, but if we meet this special match amount by November 23, which is a week ahead, Thanksgiving Day actually, then I will wear Penn State gear on Sunday, November 26th. Can't believe I just actually told you that. Again, this was not my idea. A number of people suggested this. And then when that happens, you'll be invited to wear your favorite team colors that day. We'll keep you posted along the way how that's happening. I urge you, again, please, all the way along, realize that as we talk finances at the end of the year, we're really talking about being on mission with Jesus and your gracious giving. We talked about it last week in Psalm 96, that as we give to the Lord, as we give to the Lord, it helps advance King Jesus' work in us and through us as his people. So I invite you to be really, really extra generous now through the end of the year, and especially here in November. It's all about Jesus, truly is. What brings you serious gladness? But in tandem with what I was just saying, if you're a sports fan, you readily say, well, when my team wins, brings us great gladness. 2 weeks back, our house entered a sports-heavy weekend. It was. And we found ourselves saying we're seriously hopeful that the Buckeyes win and that the Eagles win and that Hempfield Girls Volleyball wins and that the Phillies win. I mean, it was a stacked weekend. And we also knew that there was a lot of room for potential disappointment. So day by day, we're moving through the weekend, and there's a win, and there's a win, and there's a win. We were full of gladness and gladness and gladness, except the Phillies lost. But it didn't take us too much to get over that, because we're used to being disappointed by the Phillies. You are too. So we had great gladness in our house with all those wins, Here's our key concept this morning. Here's what I want you to walk with this morning. Here's what I want you to walk away with and let it blaze a trail for your soul this week. Here it is. Let's live joyously devoted to our King. Let's live joyously, like abounding gladness, because of our King. What about real joy? What brings you abiding gladness? Like what goes beyond your sports team winning? Like the deep stuff, the good stuff, the real stuff. Really. Several correlating questions run in tandem with seeking joy. And so, in fact, I'm going to challenge you that this morning, might just be the most important message you ever hear in your life. Seriously. Because there's some questions that run in tandem with this question of what brings you great joy. Questions like, what will be the captivating vision of your life, stirring you with joyful purpose? What will so capture your imagination that you gain glad assurance, glad guidance when you deeply need direction in life? And we all regularly need direction, don't we? Here's a who question. Who will be so assuring and convincing you can count on them to make it through everything you face? We all need to know someone like that. Who will become so trustworthy, your whole devotion and life direction will be forever changed? See, that's why I dare to tell you this morning, this might just be the most important message you ever hear in your life. Facing these deep soul questions, Psalm 97 can help us. If you're not there already, I'll invite you to open there in your print copy. There's also copies available in the seat back in front of you. You can take that and use it today. You can also take it with you to make it your own or share with somebody. We love it when Bibles disappear from this room, so please take one along, or you can also fire up the Bible app there if you got a Bible app, or our church app at Church Center. Watch and listen for the bigger joy and serious gladness. Listen to this. We're going to gain along the way in the next few minutes four reasons to rejoice. Four reasons to rejoice. So just take an initial listen right here. Just an initial listen to the verse. Psalm 97. The Lord reigns. Let the earth be glad. Let the distant shores rejoice. Clouds and thick darkness surround him. Righteousness and justice are the foundation of his throne. Fire goes before him and consumes his foes on every side. His lightning lights up the world. The earth sees and trembles. The mountains melt like wax before the Lord of all the earth. The heavens proclaim his righteousness, and all peoples see his glory. All who worship images are put to shame. Those who boast in idols, worship him, all you gods. Zion hears, rejoices, and the villages of Judah are glad because of your judgments, Lord. For you, Lord, are the most high over all the earth. You are exalted far above all gods. Let those who love the Lord hate evil, for he guards the lives of his faithful ones and delivers them from the hand of the wicked. Light shines on the righteous and joy on the upright in heart. Rejoice in the Lord, you who are righteous, and praise or give thanks to his holy name. Now, if we slow down, actually soak in these lines, ponder, and more deeply consider the implications, these lines can be transformative for our souls. I shared last week some backdrop on the nature of Psalms as ancient Israel's songbook. These lines are inspired by God, poetic masterpieces. So good for reorienting us in our disoriented daily world. We talked a bunch about that last week. Our constant need for being reoriented in our disoriented world. This psalm cluster we're considering across these weeks features big focus on the Lord as King. It's a grand theme, the Lord as King, grand theme driving so much of the biblical story. and right here, spotlighting Jesus' kingdom, his gracious rule and reign over all people. And because of that theme, it becomes transformative for us if we're willing to actually soak it in and listen close. His goodness, holiness, beauty, righteousness, and justice. So majestic and capable of utterly transforming our perspective and how we do all of life every day. Big key is slowing down enough to soak in a passage like Psalm 97. So the next few minutes, I invite you, urge you, challenge you to encounter the Lord as King and consider how you'll respond. Let's live joyously devoted to our King. Let's live joyously devoted to our King. Verse 1 says, the Lord reigns. Let the earth be glad. Let the distant shores rejoice. Our first reason to rejoice is this: the Lord is truly sovereign. The Lord is truly sovereign. The Lord is truly sovereign. Amidst wicked, confusing people, and we all see them, confusing people who seem to get their way, wicked people who seem to get their way, and we all see it around us, puzzling circumstances that generate curious questions, and we all face such curiosities, such puzzlement, debilitating trials, and we all travel through such, horrific heartaches, and we all have them. Here's the bigger, stronger reality. This verse should stir us to a very high view of his wondrous sovereignty. His kingship means he's in control, all wise, all powerful, working out his royal plans, and we can trust him. You can trust him. I can trust him. The Lord is truly sovereign, so you can trust him. Our faith can grow, and one of the big ways such trust shows up is with the choice to rejoice, the deliberate, intentional choice to rejoice. And some of you, the words of St. Paul are coming to mind right now for you. Or maybe if you're new and exploring the faith, this one will jump at you. It's Paul who says, rejoice in the Lord always. And again I say, rejoice. It's command. It's a charge. It's a challenge. Even in the face of all of the tough stuff we constantly face, the choice to rejoice. Why? Why? Because the Lord is truly sovereign. We're called to such an outlook, no matter what, in all things. Let's live joyously devoted to our King. I had a day not long ago that felt overwhelming. Utterly overwhelming with all that I needed to accomplish and the pressures I was facing. And I know you have those kinds of days too. And I was just having one of those days when it was just extra. Ooh. And I really was feeling exasperated and stressed and pushed and pressed and miserable and grumpy even. Yeah. But several of these truths about God's sovereign control and his royal kingly help hit my heart in a fresh way, scattered throughout my day. And I honestly didn't every moment of that day respond appropriately. Like I said, I had those grumpy moments. I had those hard and pressed and pushed moments. But I have to tell you, when I got down to the end of the day, I realized, oh, Lord, thank you. You're still in control. Oh, Lord, I'm so grateful. You are ruling and reigning. You are still in control. You are truly sovereign. Truly sovereign. It makes all the difference. Now encounter the Lord as King in verses 2 through 5. Verses 2 through 5. And consider your response. Clouds and thick darkness surround him. righteousness and justice are the foundation of his throne. Fire goes before him and consumes his foes on every side. His lightning lights up the world. The earth sees and trembles. Last week's message, we talked about that holy fear and trembling. The mountains melt like wax before the Lord of all the earth. Here's the second reason to rejoice. Second reason to rejoice, our king rightly handles the enemy. Our king rightly handles the enemy. Whereas the opening lines issued a call to be glad and rejoice, we're immediately now swept into a vision that might look more like doom, gloom, fear, and judgment instead of delight. Sort of like our family's time at Hershey Park last weekend for a day there. A friend got us some tickets, which was really cool. We're really grateful for that. But it was an interesting day because, it was still their season where they're doing their Dark Nights thing. And we landed there earlier in the day, and it was a gorgeous fall day. How many of you have made it up to Hershey in this last year for something, either summertime or this fall? How many of you? Number of you, yeah. It was such a stunning mix as we went because the sun was out and the breeze was blowing, and in so many ways it was idyllic autumn. It was just gorgeous. Leaves were cascading down. The breeze was blowing, and it was packed with people. So leaves are falling on the road, and thousands of people are walking over them, and it was creating almost like chalk art, like reds and oranges on the road. It was truly beautiful. And then nighttime rolled around. And it was like somebody flipped a switch about 6 o'clock. What a stunning mix. Because everything turned dark in the park, and they started pumping the fog machines and the big music, dark music. And wow, it was ominous. An eerie light. Some of you are grinning. You know you've been there during this season. What a stunning mix. And in a certain way, sort of like that in Psalm 97. Poetic words here in Psalm 97, extremely picturesque, including these elements from nature like dark clouds, thick darkness, fire, lightning, melting mountains. Righteousness and justice, though, don't miss it. Righteousness and justice are the foundation of his throne. Righteousness and justice. Twin character qualities get the spotlight as foundational traits in his rule and reign. Note that. Foundational traits in his rule and reign. Righteousness and justice. Now, this means his leadership is based on and flows from what is right, upright, good, true, faithful, through and through, reliable. In early basic form, such rightness and justice showed up in ancient market life with correct, reliable weights and measures. So this word cluster was used way, way, way back there in the marketplace of their day. Weights and measures. So a pound was a true pound. you could count on it. Ounces were really ounces. If they weren't, a ruler, a judge, or other authority would swoop in on the person in the market, the seller, and get them for such injustice. They'd be shut down, fined, or worse. One of the weekly places that righteousness and justice show up in your life today is at the gas pump. Now, some of you are immediately saying, no, I'm getting ripped off at the gas pump right now. It can feel that way. But the reality is, if you look close on your gas pump, you'll see that little seal, that little sticker on there that lets you know that it's been inspected. So a gallon means a gallon. So if you're at BJ's or you're at Turkey Hill or you're at Sheets or wherever you get your gas, in the sense of measurement, they're doing right by you. And I know you're still thinking, but not by price. Okay. But in measurement, yes. And yes, here's where this judicial image of a person holding the scales comes from. Notice then how dreadful and doomsday-ish the description becomes. Foes are consumed by fire. The earth trembles and mountains melt. The king's righteousness and justice in the face of evil have dire implications for both humans and all of creation. Important point to ponder, how your own view of God affects your daily life. Your own view of God as king. I know you've said it about someone, I have. You've said it about someone, he is really tough to figure out, or she is really tough to figure out. How about with the Lord God, creator? Have you said it? Psalm 97 really can help if we sincerely seek to encounter him right here. Many of us don't really engage regular rhythms of joyous, grateful praise, like daily, like in the flow of our daily lives. We don't engage like that in ways that are transformative because we're confused about God. We struggle to make sense of him. Or we just really don't like what we think we see through the hand he's dealt us, so we end up living blasé. At best, mediocre, meh. In our daily outlook toward divine character and ways. Or we take it even further and we just carve out our own preferred version of divine character and ways, and we make it up ourselves and we say, well, that's who God is. What might happen if we start to realize he's not confusing? He's just wonderfully complex. Now, seriously, I want to challenge you to start to see God that way. He's not confusing. He's just wonderfully complex. And the truth is, the best family members you know, the best friends you've had in life, the most influential people in your life, well, if you actually think about it, they're wonderfully complex. Some people only see God as always only sappy nice, gushing kind, always to everybody, or at least you want to see him that way. Sort of like a doting grandfather handing out lollipops and $20 bills. When life is good, then you see that as reinforcing your view of God that way, and you rejoice in grateful praise, and that flows easy. But on those days when the king doesn't grant your every wish, well, suddenly you're not so sure he's really trustworthy. And your outlook grows sour and meh, and you hold back from rejoicing. Other people only see the king as stern and mean and exacting, rigid, just waiting for you to step out of line, sneeze too loud, or say something that's even close to a bad word. And the thought is then, if he catches me like that, he'll zap me. If you're one of those mean king people, you can't help but see all your life misfortunes as coming from his over-judgy hand. And you're sure he's just waiting to get you in the end. So you're really pretty convinced. You're really pretty convinced that he's not trustworthy. Your outlook is readily ugh toward God as king. Many people, this is so true in our day, it might be true for you. Many people fall somewhere into that messy middle, confused about God, so really super cautious about devoting themselves to joyously follow him as their personal, loving, strong sovereign. What if you let the confusion clear today? And you see how he's instead marvelously complex and so worthy of our praise. Psalm 97's next verses, vision and response sheds further light. Center of the psalm, verse 6, the heavens proclaim his righteousness and all peoples see his glory. Here's a third reason to rejoice. Third reason to rejoice. Magnificent heavens proclaim his majesty. Magnificent heavens proclaim his majesty. We sang it earlier. Very normal to encounter And you need to know this, because some of you, I can tell the looks in your eyes, you're like, yeah, I've been confused about God that way. That's very normal. Very normal. Internal confusion and some chaos even, and some holding back from really rejoicing and following him in a devoted way. But here is where tremendous clarity comes if we look up. If we look up, literally, the heavens are so magnificent, they reveal the king's majesty. Astronomer Hugh Ross says, what astronomers and physicists are discovering is that the being who brought the universe into existence is not only personal, creative, powerful, and intelligent to an unimaginable degree, but he is also aware of and sensitive to the needs of humanity. The heavens are being read and understood. Now, Ross can say this because he's an astronomer. He's been at the forefront of discoveries. He says the heavens are being read and understood with a degree of clarity and conviction never before possible. Discoveries that point people to the greatest discovery of all time. The God who is there and who cares. The God who planned and prepared our existence for his good purposes. Our creative, most high King created it all. His glory means he's all powerful, utterly impressive. When's the last time you got out there and looked up? I urge you to do it today. The common theme in the lobby before and after services has been, wow. It's gorgeous. Wow. This is called bonus fall, folks. Really? So I want to urge you tonight, get out there under the stars and look up and dare to go, wow. Dare to wake up a little earlier tomorrow morning and you're like, oh yeah, they did that time change thing. That's going to happen anyway. So make the most of it. Get out there. Look up. We're living in a famine of wow right now in life. We've at points to our grand detriment, unplugged from the wonder and the awe of creation, of our creative King and his incredible majesty, and we fail to see it, and so we hold back from joyously praising him. Get out there. Look up. Now, unfortunately, this is not everyone's response to the King. Some go after idols, and they're put to shame. Verse 7 says, all who worship images are put to shame. Those who boast in idols, worship him, all you gods. Here's the fourth reason for rejoicing. Our King is real in contrast to idols. Our King is real in contrast to idols. Our King is real in contrast to idols. A godless idol worship response was forbidden with the first and second commandments, Exodus 20, 2 through 6. You shall have no other gods. You shall not make for yourself an image. You shall not bow down or worship them. God warns of punishment for those who do such. But in contrast, God tells how he shows love to those who love him and keep his commands. Now, if you're quick to think, nobody in modern day times really makes and worships idols. Think again. Even on our side of the planet, our present day idols include self-image making, trying to make our own image way more than we are. For some, idolatry is the making much of materialism and consumerism. So making money and stuffing away stuff becomes a passionate priority. Hour by hour, day after day, we worship the idolatrous altar of consumerism. For others in our day, idols are our power-seeking, messiah-making, making national leaders and global leaders even, politics our hope instead of the one true King, Jesus. So many others in our day craft idols of immoral pleasure-making, making sex outside God-honoring marriage their devoted affection. And for so many, idolatry boils down to personal merit-making, making religiosity and good works our righteous merits. All other world religions come down to this. Got to aim to do enough good works to merit my right standing with God, and it becomes this idolatry. I got to work my way there. I got to be religious enough. I got to be good enough. I'll make my own merit. It's why 1 John 5:21 warns. John warns us, dear children, keep yourselves from idols. Psalm 97, 8, and 9 shows us how God's people respond. God's people respond to their true king and his righteous dealings. Zion hears and rejoices. The villages of Judah are glad because of your judgments, Lord. For you, Lord, are the most high over all the earth. You are exalted far above all gods. In all-out contrast to worshiping idols, let's live joyously devoted to our real, true king. Verse 10 supplies further encounter and response. Note what it says. Let those who love the Lord hate evil. For he guards, note that, he guards the lives of his faithful ones and delivers them from the hand of the wicked. Lovers of the Lord are those who so deeply delight in him and are devoted in faithful obedience. Listen to that again, friends. Listen. Lovers of the Lord are those who so deeply delight in him and are devoted in faithful obedience. Note again how this links back to Exodus 20. And hating evil in the life of a God follower is the other rail on the train track. Love God, hate evil. We live in a day when hating is quickly downplayed in the name of love. Have you noticed it? Hating is quickly downplayed. Truth is, healthy hatred is essential. Proverbs 6, 16 through 19 declares there are six things, seven things the Lord hates. C.S. Lewis said, certain things, if not seen as lovely or detestable, are not being correctly seen at all. Life guru Henry Cloud says this. Watch what Cloud says. Character is in part formed by what we hate, because we move to be different from whatever that is. Hate is part of the immune system of your soul. In the same way that your immune system hates infection, the hate within your character identifies things in your life as evil. In Romans 12, verse 9, the Apostle Paul wrote, love must be sincere. Hate what is evil, cling to what is good. Now, we readily want hatred in certain situations. You know you do. I so wish that my dog would learn to hate eating trash. Why can't he see what a mess it makes in our kitchen? This thought hit me during first 9 o'clock service. I looked at Nance. She was sitting right at here. I'm like, did we move the chairs around the garbage can again? Because if we didn't, well, there's likelihood we'll go back home to a mess. And I end up saying, dog, come on. You claim you love me. You act like you love me. And then you, come on, learn to hate trash. Present day, we muddle and muddy, water down, and blasé all sorts of things. And later we wonder why the consequences are so painful. Listen, friends, we need more than ever, we need a renewed spiritual zeal for what is right and what is wrong. Do you know the true king so well that his wondrous beauty, his righteousness and holiness are shaping your character so you love what he loves and you hate what he hates? As such, love-hate train runs through the soul of your life. You come to know the guarding, guiding, protecting, delivering work of your wonderful King. Let's live joyously devoted to our King. Let's live joyously devoted to our King. Now note the final two verses in Psalm 97 and catch the final call to rejoicing. Light shines, or literally it says like seed that's spread, like seed that's planted. In other words, something's planted and then it springs up beautiful. Light shines on the righteous. Note that. On the righteous. And joy on the upright in heart. Rejoice in the Lord, you who are righteous. Note that. You who are righteous and praise his holy name. What a contrast to the clouds and thick darkness of verse 2. Light shines. Across this psalm, we've seen how righteousness is dominant in the King's character. But now, humans are called righteous. Now that's curious. Really? How does this happen? See, other biblical passages say there's no one righteous. Not even one. Other spots say, all have sinned and fall short of God's glory. So what hope do we have? Here's where the wondrous, righteous one, King Jesus himself, came to do what we could never do, accomplish what we could never accomplish on our own. Left to ourselves, we make idols all the time of all kinds, especially that self-centered, works-oriented, merit-making. We think we can be good enough. In reality, there's no merit of our own, only his all-sufficient merit for us in what he did on the cross for us. That merciful sacrificial work allows the righteous King and Judge to declare us righteous. It's so wondrous, so powerful. How do we know this? St. Paul connects the dots for us. 2 Corinthians 5:21. 2 Corinthians 5:21. For God made Christ, who never sinned, to be the offering for our sin, so that we could be made right with God through Christ. That's New Living Translation. The New International Version says, God made him who had no sin to be sin for us, so that in him we might become the righteousness of God. No merit of our own. Righteous because of King Jesus. Are you trusting him like that? Are you believing, trusting him like that makes all the difference? As we sing this final song, the team's coming right now, I'm going to challenge you to respond with heartfelt believing and rejoicing. I want to challenge you to sing the words and pray deeply. Let's stand to our feet. We're going to sing this closing song that is going to rivet our hearts in this way together. And as you sing, I want to urge you to do more than just mouth the words. I want to urge you to make them deeply your own. Sing the words and pray deeply. Tell him how grateful you are. Tell him you're trusting him for what he did for you to make you righteous. Confess. Go ahead. Confess you can't make anything right on your own. Confess you're relying fully on him and rejoicing in him. Thank you, Jesus. Thank you for such immense call. We rejoice in you right now. We choose to believe that your righteousness transforms us, gives us the ultimate opportunity to rejoice because of what you've done for us, Jesus. Your righteousness on our behalf. Thank you.